interrupted the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally-controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode PTWRLM 652. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Kind of like now. Really all over us, isn't it? And on that nuclear-glowing front, Trump orders nuclear weapons tests. The United States president has said that he was left with no choice in light of Russian and Chinese arsenals. No choice. I'm supposed to believe the let-them-eat-chaos president has created the corner he is trapped in with no other choice? Really? The most powerful guy on the whole planet has no choices. Trump made the announcement ahead of his meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Busan, South Korea on Thursday. The United States has more nuclear weapons than any other country. This was accomplished, including a complete update and renovation of existing weapons during my first term in office. Because of the tremendous destructive power, I hated to do it, but had no choice. Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform. I got to highlight this again. What we have found out and what the court has acknowledged, what they say on their Truth Socials or social medias doesn't mean much. But here it is. He's letting you all know. Quote, Russia is second and China is a distant third, but will be even within 5 years. Because of other countries' testing programs, I have instructed the Department of War to start testing our nuclear weapons on an equal basis. That process will begin immediately, he added. But just no choice. Not even for the peace faker-in-chief to make a nuclear deal? Who'd have thunk it? The U.S. halted nuclear tests in 1992 under a Congress-mandated moratorium. Members of the Trump's cabinet reportedly discussed reversing the moratorium during his first term after the U.S. accused China and Russia of secretly conducting an underground low-yield nuclear test, a claim Beijing and Moscow denied. Again, the claim without the proof is part of, just attached to this guy's suit. According to a recent estimate by Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, the U.S. has 5,177 nuclear warheads, Russia has 5,459, and China is projected to reach 1,500 by 2035. The U.S. test-fired an unarmed, nuclear-capable Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile in February and launched 4 Trident II missiles from a submarine in September. Earlier this month, Russia test-fired its nuclear-capable Burevestnik cruise missile powered by a small nuclear reactor that gives it a virtually unlimited range. So this may actually be a bit of a nuclear relaxation by the United States if we listen very carefully, like so much of the performative pretense of power Trump does to sound impressive, saying any nuclear weapons on an equal basis, however immediate, is the key here, I think. And the other clue is that these so-called tests that are being done are not nuclear tests, so-called. They are systems tests, not for the nuclear weapons. When you see the limitation, the equal basis in this, he said it so nonchalantly, this is an equal basis based on other nations testing, and there aren't any nations testing. So this statement really has no impact. It actually takes a step, however so slight, back relative to the United States pulling out of the nuclear treaties, which implied aggressive nuclear weapon development, including testing. I'm not going to be removing the nuclear glowing postulated cricketism from my intro just yet, but it sounds as if, with the caveat that this policy can change at flip-flopper speed, that the current policy of the United States, at least for today, will only test a nuclear weapon when another country does. And then again, what about those two nuclear weapon-loaded submarines Trump snuggled up closer to Russia, all the while saying denuclearization would be a tremendous thing? Which flip-flopping Trump do you or can you believe? Is the problem strategic ambiguity brings and the real potential for a catastrophic mistake to happen? something arguably not quite as powerful as a nuclear weapon detonation. Netanyahu orders powerful strikes on Gaza after consultation with the military. Not the United States military, their own military. Peace through strength, right? Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered powerful strikes on the Gaza Strip after consultations with the Army. The Prime Minister's office said, quote, following the conclusion of security consultations, Prime Minister Netanyahu instructed the military leadership to immediately launch powerful strikes against the Gaza Strip, as a quote. But I looked at that, and there's no consultation with the guarantors, no consultation with the Board of Peace. You know the peacemaker when you see him. We ain't seeing him. And who is running the show? The bought and paid for Trumpster fire attraction distraction or Netanyahu? Or those behind Netanyahu? And what respectable open air prison and waste place concentration camp internee subject to genocide would continue working under those conditions? Hamas to delay transfer of hostages' body amid ceasefire violations by Israel. So we have a material breach to the purported misfire. Where's Trump to eradicate the offending Israelis, as he promised to do eradicate the Hamas if they didn't stop killing Israeli-backed militia gangs killing Palestinians? Wait, what? Yeah, the Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Palestinian movement Hamas, said on Tuesday that they will postpone the transfer of hostages remains to Israel due to violation of the ceasefire by Tel Aviv. On Monday, the Hamas military wing said that it had found the body of a deceased hostage in one of the tunnels under the Gaza Strip and planned to transfer the body to Israel. Quote, we will postpone the previously scheduled transfer of the hostage's body due to violations by the occupying forces. Weil emphasizes that any escalation by the Zionists will complicate the process of searching and extracting the remains, which in turn will slow down the process of returning the bodies to Israel, the military wing said on its social media. Searching and extracting sounds like a protected civilian function, not a military one. So where's the UN on this? Where are the guarantors? Where is those Board of Peace that never has been? The Board of Peace already. Never really got started. Also, I'm the greatest peace dealer of all time, Trump. Israel should hit back. Trump on recent Israeli strikes on Gaza. With all due respect, if any still exists, why is Israel anywhere near Gaza? Where are the guarantors of peace? What is your Board of Peace doing to keep the peace, President Trump? How is agreeing that anyone should hit back, let alone they are the illegal occupiers? How is it any peace deal when you believe Semitic Palestinians have a right to defend themselves must be eradicated? Not their illegally occupying murderous oppressors. And how is that eradication not an intention to further genocide that you conveniently deny, an evasion of your duties and obligations as President of the United States? How does that demonstrable evasion of duty make America great again? How do these evasions of duty in favor of foreign interests not evidence a tyrant in the office and an existential threat to all Americans? Well, U.S. President Donald Trump said on Wednesday that Israel should respond to possible attacks to Palestinian movement Hamas, adding that this would not lead to a violation of the ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, and, quote, nothing is going to jeopardize the Gaza agreement. I don't know if Trump has enough money to pay attention here, but there is no agreement. There has never been a meeting of the minds here at all, ever. That's partly what I was reporting last episode and highlighted the fact that the supposed parties to the contract were not at the table. The president added that the Middle East peace process is entering a second phase. Quote, we're getting into a phase two, Trump said aboard Air Force One en route to Tokyo into South Korea. However, the United States president did not explain what he expected from the new stage of the Gaza peace deal. How would any uninformed delinquent explain how any phase of a peace deal would go that doesn't exist. And where in all actuality, peace only means truce, as I highlighted also in prior episodes. Or that anyone with a couple of functioning brain cells understood that with the return of the hostages, the synagogue of Satan Yehu had no reason to stop its intended genocide. On the other hand, what would a shuck and jiver offer when any peace deal, so-called, in name only, is entirely a deal of deception? Don't get lost in the spectacle here, especially where one side is authorized to hit back without a right to hit at all, let alone continue the ongoing genocide, or where it's known Israel supports Palestinian militias, which Trump defended, that could create false flag attacks that are used to defame Hamas, which is or was itself supported by Satan Yehu to eradicate Hamas and destroy the evidence of the game plan. Is that too many moving parts for Trump to keep up with? Or is Trump just the front man for a takedown, foreign and domestic, of we all? And the supreme leader, old Nick Ear, just went Israel firster. Where we go one, we go all, indeed. Hamas is a very small part of the peace in the Middle East. If we have to, we'll take out Hamas very easily, Vince, easily, and that'll be the end of Hamas. We would rather not. We made a deal with them, Trump noted. Well, take note too. Hamas is part of the Semitic Palestinian people having a right of self-determination over their daily governance and governing functions in the whole of Palestine. So taking out Hamas is a direct assault on the very first article of the international law, and trespassing on the second, the Palestinian territory, their territory. But apparently, the big, beautiful piece of dung deal imposed upon the Palestinians wasn't made with Satan Yehu's band of bloodthirsty murderers who haven't stopped killing and just defied Trump relative to any peace deal or stealing more territory, and while Trump continues to sit on his hands. In fact, right here, by this nustus, to should hit Hamas, condoning the defecation. Or is it actually that Trump's hands are way too full of chosen donations to be of any good use? With a peace deal like that, who needs wars? At least this inquiring sound mind needs to know these things, because they reflect directly on where I live, and the tactics to expect Trump is using, if they aren't obvious by now, or in continuing confirmation of the onshoring of the future that they want, incrementally making war on Americans, and much more speedily since the false flag attack of 9/11. Those that are listening, what are you listening to? What do you hear? Did you notice how this is consistently being pulled through? What is your consideration? Russia weighs in, hoping Israel's West Bank sovereignty bill will not be approved. Proposed and agreed and debated, completely contrary to what Trump has said about the peace deal and that it wasn't going anywhere. But all Russia can do is hope? That's all Russia has to offer, being high on hopium? But that's not what is important. What is important is what this land theft will do. Moscow hopes that Israel's bill on West Bank sovereignty will not reach final approval. Otherwise, and the more important point, and contrary to any peacemaker promotion, a new escalation will be inevitable, Russian Foreign Minister spokeswoman Maria Sakharova said on Thursday. So there, the known to occupy escalation by the illegal occupying belligerent Israelis, sticking it right in Trump's muzzle. It's recognized internationally. On October 2nd, Israeli Knesset approved two bills in preliminary readings on extending Israeli sovereignty to the West Bank. Both were introduced by opposition lawmakers. We hope that the bill will not reach final approval. Otherwise, it will be impossible to avoid a new, dangerous escalation of tensions, both in the occupied Palestinian territory and in the Middle East region as a whole, Sakharova told a briefing. But hopium springs eternal. I thought the Russians outlawed vaping. High on hopium, Russia is. Oh boy. That's all Russia can do, though, as these murderous, bloodthirsty marauders steal the territory of another and kill innocent people, especially targeting babies. Is that it? That's all they can do. Just hope. But escalate, the barbaric, murderous, savage Israelis will. The remaining question is, will Trump be good for his word this time? Now, let's see if we can be a bit respectful and not burst out laughing all at once. Will Israeli lose all support from the United States as peacemaker Donald Make America First, but Israeli firster Trump declared and promised recently? I can already hear Russia taking another opium hit on its vape. And while extrajudicially and extraterritorially murdering presumed innocent people on high seas, Trump doesn't stop the terror networks at home, within the borders, creating the demand. Or did you think the so-called Jewish so-called, because as we're instructed at Romans 2:29, no man can declare a Jew, which praise is solely from God. Did you think the domestic so-called Jewish narco-mafia just disappeared? And why don't we hear more about that war against that, of its other illicit endeavors, instead of those of the politically expedient homegrown? FBI uses a secret threat category for Israeli criminals operating in the United States. The agency has never publicly disclosed that it monitors organized crime syndicates based in Israel. But let's go after the homegrown granny's social media post, right, Cash? The FBI's growing list of domestic threats has mutated in recent years to include every conceivable affiliation of Americans across the political spectrum. Right-wing violent extremists, left-wing violent extremists, black identity extremists, and animal rights act extremists. But again, the government is a hammer. Everything looks like a nail, doesn't it? And we were told this is coming with that PATRIOT Act. The current administration has even added nihilistic violent extremists, those who believe in nothing, to the laundry list. The Biden administration, for its part, aided in this exercise by vastly overstating the threat posed by Trump-aligned conservatives in the wake of the January 6th. But neither Democrat nor Republican administrations have ever grandstanded about another significant threat group that the FBI secretly monitors on U.S. soil. Israeli-based organized crime syndicates, or IBOCs, leaked FBI records and court filings detain widespread money laundering, taxpayer theft, and drug smuggling enterprises operated in the United States by Israeli citizens connected or belonging to Israeli crime groups. Notice we didn't see trafficking, human trafficking. Why? At any rate, we'll keep reading. Despite the trickle of prosecutions over the last 25 years, the FBI has never publicly disclosed the fact that it has designated resources allocated to investigate these criminal organizations. The 2020 FBI intelligence report from the Blue Leaks hack conducted by the hacker group Anonymous and archived by the nonprofit DDO Secrets describes IBOCs operating in Nevada and Florida, embezzling money from the Paycheck Protection Program, called PPP. So similar to public-private partnership, which is another theft system. IBOCs, quote, have defrauded U.S. government relief programs and manipulated tax documents since at least 2015 to reduce tax liability and conceal money laundering activities, as well as have to access to companies and agents which are necessary to process PPP loan applications, the report found. The reports also list instances of IBOCs committing both disaster relief and tax fraud, and notes that IBOCs are involved in money laundering, extortion, illegal gambling, fraud, and narcotics trafficking in Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Miami, and New York, according to the FBI investigations. Now, right there, Miami is a lot closer than Venezuela or Colombia, and doesn't require an expensive military presence or the extrajudicial murder of people presumed innocent, right, under the authority vested in me, Trump? What about the authority vested in people presumed innocent, and what about thou shalt not murder? As far back as 2009, leaked State Department cables obtained by WikiLeaks detail one of the reasons why criminals belonging to or associated with Israeli crime families and syndicates have been able to operate inside America with ease. The State Department is not authorized to block their visas. The cables warn of the Israeli mafia taking on a growing role in America's trade of ecstasy and of a loophole which prevents U.S. embassies from automatically denying Israeli crime figures travel documents. While the State Department has formalized powers in its foreign affairs manual to restrict visas for China's triads, Japanese Yakuza, the Italian Mafia, the Hells Angels, Biker Gang, Outlaws, Bandidos, and Mongols, and two dozen Latin America gangs, including Tren de Aragua, Israeli organized crime groups remain absent more than a decade after the State Department cable first warned of the Israeli Mafia loophole. Quote, given the volume of travel and trade between the United States and Israel, and it's not surprising that Israeli OC organized crime has also gained a foothold in America, one cable reads. The consular section has revoked several visas for those who have been convicted of crimes in Israel, but many OC figures have no prior criminal convictions and carry no visa ineligibilities. As a result, many hold valid non-immigrant visas to the United States and have traveled freely or attempted to travel for a variety of purposes. A former FBI special agent who worked on the investigations involving IBOCs told the American Conservative, quote, there is real Israeli organized crime in this country, and there is a formalized FBI program for investigating these groups, adding that, quote, they look for the success of other criminals and then try to build a better model on those. He also said, quote, once you move beyond that and your target becomes more sophisticated, they are presumed to be intelligence operatives and operatives of the Israeli government, and then that gets moved high side in the National Security Division. A sentencing letter for an international narcotic smuggling case prosecuted in the Southern District of New York hints at this reality, referencing the IBOC's designation in a connection to the international ecstasy smuggling conspiracy. Quote, the defendant encouraged in internationally laundering narcotics proceeds as part of an Israeli-based organized crime syndicate. Closed quote. In addition to his demonstrated ability to launder drug money across the borders, he also possessed ample global connections in the narcotics trade and access to narcotics themselves. A second former FBI agent pointed to the recent West Coast indictment of, quote, a suspected high-level member of an Israeli transnational organization of crime group running an illegal poker game in Hollywood. It's no secret that politics inevitably shapes enforcement priorities, the agent said, explaining why the Bureau has never highlighted the IBOC's enforcement or the Epstein Files hoax. Who hided that? Quote, this has not been a popular thing to wave around in the press, and I wonder why. Which is why you see a steady stream of prosecutions related to Israeli crime figures without the same discussion of organization that you might have with cartels or gangs. So politically unpopular is criticism of illegal activities by Israelis that repeated espionage efforts have been swept under the rug, or at the very least restricted from public view. What about the sweetheart deals with Epstein? According to the report, Israelis were not sanctioned with a formal reprimand from the State Department. Another potential reason for the lack of visibility on IBOCs is the changing face of Israeli politics and the increasing proximity of organized crime figures to the ruling Likud party. Satan Yehu, is that you? What about Trump or Jared Kushner? No questions with this sort of ideological nepotism? None whatsoever? 10 Likud officials chose to spend the Jewish holiday of Sukkot with convicted mobster Rafi chain Kido Shim this year. In the past, members of Israel's mafia families elected to parliament on the Likud line have attempted to use their position to quash investigations in organized crime. Satan Yehu, you making more war like that? Is that where you get it? FBI did not respond to American Conservative's request for comment about the current status of the Bureau's IBOC's investigations. No, but go after Granny's unwoke, ideologically offensive social media post and more extortion through the civil rights of taxation from the professional and amateur gamblers that don't cook their books to evade taxes or launder money. That's what we're going to do here. Yeah, that'll make America real great again, won't it? But by that corruption, so does it a U.S. lawmaker accused of sex tape blackmail. You only thought it was empty. Dalia Artar became the first Orthodox Jewish woman to serve in the Maryland Senate this January. U.S. federal officials have charged a Maryland Democratic state senator with extortion for allegedly masterminding a blackmail scheme involving secretly filmed explicit videos, according to an indictment unsealed on Thursday. Dalia Artar, who was the first elected to the Maryland House of Delegates in 2018, was re-elected in 2022, became the first Orthodox Jewish woman to serve in the Maryland state this year, the Senate. The court documents allege that Attar devised a plan to stop a former employee from speaking out against her 2022 re-election bid. Prosecutors say she conspired with her brother, Joseph Attar, and Baltimore police officer Kalman Finkelstein, who had worked on her campaign. Starting in 2020, they worked to threaten the ex-employee into silence using covertly taken videos of her in bed with a married man, the court documents allege. According to WhatsApp messages cited in the case, Attar said she wanted the ex-consultant to be a non-issue in my mind. 2 years later, she is still looking to screw me badly, even more reason why the lady should be afraid to come out with anything at any point, Attar was cited as saying. Group allegedly conspired to follow the ex-consultant's movements using a tracker on her loaned car and to secure intimate videos of her with her lover by installing cameras disguised as smoke detectors, the court documents said. The victim was staying at an apartment owned by Finkelstein's family at the time. The indictment says that Joseph Attar later approached the ex-consultant's lover to threaten them with the release of the video and demanding that she stay out of this election. All three have been charged with extortion, wiretapping, and other offenses and face a sentence of at least 20 years if convicted on all counts. Remember the last story I just said? These are not connected to organized anything, right? Oh, they're just them. They're a group. But where have I heard this story before? I wonder where she got this idea for sexual blackmail relying on a network of unorthodox people. There must be a manual on this somewhere. It seems to closely follow the same blackmail script of the Epstein hoax. Isn't that right? They sure seem to be in all the important places to adversely affect the lives of all Americans, don't they? How many more people are silenced by or comply with the unorthodox types that make themselves look normal, being a seemingly global phenomenon? Why is it only this group got caught, not the others? Too orthodox for the Klan, maybe? The Steinstein gang, a sacrificial lamb? Got dirt on the wrong implanted agent interfering with another, more important blackmail operation with the same married man? What is Trumpenstein and the other admitted Israeli firster, Patelstein, covering up, calling it a hoax? What's going on all here now? What bigger fish are there to fry that never seem to get caught? Clearly, blackmail and bribery is an effective tool under whatever euphemism one might call bribery. Who owns them? Can pwn them. But what about the children the West claims so dearly to care about as it assists genocide in Gaza? There has never been any concern for Serbian children who experienced NATO bombings in 1999. Quote, the West once again manipulates and juggles with children's lives, and no one has ever asked how the children from Libya, Syria, and also from the former Yugoslavia will live after the NATO bombings. In Yugoslavia, has anyone at the UN Secretariat held a conference for the children who witnessed the bombings in Belgrade? Those children whose parents later died of cancer because depleted uranium was used in those bombings? Maybe there are lists of children killed during the NATO bombings of the former Yugoslavia. No one cares. Zakharova, anti-fake. The truth always wins. Commenting on fake news about allegedly stolen children in Ukraine. The spokeswoman for the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Maria Zakharova, stated in the news conference, "What about that, First Lady Melania Trump?" And another murderous character, we see the monkey fall out of the tree, I think. Gates reveals strategic pivot on climate change. I'm not going to get too much deep into this. I just want to point out what's going on in this world. You know, from what they called climate change, as I've told you, it's not about the weather. From what they claim and what they got out of this, what the mileage that Gates got out of this situation is a terrible thing to behold. I'm laughing. I'm not laughing. I don't know what else to do. This guy really is in trouble. But he now pivots after everything you've seen over 15, 20 years. He now has a strategic pivot on climate change. A memo from Microsoft co-founder urges less alarmism, more help for developing nations. And that's another problem, the developing nations term. Bill Gates, long known for warning about the dangers of climate change, is now urging a shift away from the calls of doomsday rhetoric, arguing that while climate change is serious, it won't spell the end of humanity. Please go back and remember what Gates had said. It had a formula that says if we get all, rid of all the people, because that's the one we have control over in this formula relative to carbon, that we can save humanity from itself. And all this time, somehow he's now kind of a revelation. Oh, that won't really spell the end of humanity. People will be able to live and thrive in most places on Earth for the foreseeable future, Gates wrote in a 17-page memo released on his 70th birthday. The Microsoft co-founder, who has spent billions on clean energy and adaptation projects, is now calling for more focus on improving lives in developing countries rather than fixating on short-term emission targets. Gates' new message, which he calls a strategic pivot, comes just ahead of the United Nations annual climate summit in Brazil, though he won't be attending as he's done in the past. Despite the change in tone, Gates isn't abandoning climate action entirely. He continues to invest in clean energy startups and nuclear power through ventures like Breakthrough Energy. Can I just point out that nuclear power is what the AI needs? That's how he's going to profit? You're going to give it to silicone running powerful heat generated engines, big buildings creating bunches of heat instead of giving it to you as your bills go up? That's what he's doing. But with the Gates Foundation set to wind down and break through energy making cuts, Gates is increasingly directing his philanthropy, he's a philanthropath, toward health and poverty. Oh boy, we better be afraid, and I mean truly so. He's redirecting now to health. What did he do with the great Comey swindle? And poverty. We're back to what? Prosperity under the sustainable development, which means austerity. Health and poverty in the developing world, which is really a theft of the rich world, partly to fill gaps left by shrinking U.S. foreign aid under the Trump administration. Gates argues that alarmist messages about climate change may backfire, suggesting that optimism is more effective in inspiring action. Where's this guy come from now? Where's he been? That all of a sudden now, optimism, instead of what he's been doing. He contends that focusing on lowering the cost of clean energy and making industries less polluting is more productive than obsessing over temperature targets. Well, what's that? He's got to come out. Even Blair is coming out. Tony Blair, the globalist himself. One of the guys is going to be technocratic Gaza. is also coming out to now advocate lower costs because their subsidies and their new green energy was a big flop, and everybody's now starting to see they can't afford power. And it's always been about pollution. It's the conflation of the pollution that they used to bring on this issue of carbon being a pollutant. So we're not really too far away from Catbox cover-up here, and he's still doing the same thing. But the hang-wringing critics point out that Gates' memo sidestepped some of the most dire scenarios that scientists, are they really the scientists, warn about, such as irreversible tipping points and mass coral die-offs, issues he has acknowledged in the past. Well, you'll understand that those are all frauds. Those are all fraudulent consensus-based politics. Why climate change is not about the weather. Quote, if you think climate is not important, you won't agree with the memo, Gates told reporters before its release. Quote, if you think climate is the only cause and you're apocalyptic, you won't agree with the memo. Hear that, Missy, misguided Green Greta? I guess his formula to eliminate people was a bit extensive then, right? What then about the overestimation of the gene therapy bioweapons pawned off as vaccines? What about anything else this philanthropath has to say? He needs to be relocated to a small outcropping in the South China Sea. And speaking of a liberal Obama pivot to China, and that climate change is not about the weather, Senate probes tax-exempt status of Gates Foundation and others. America's green movement has a China problem. Many of the state-run Chinese universities that receive funding from a trio of foundations, notably Tsinghua, Peking, Sun Yat-sen, and Tsinghua Jiangtang universities, research military technology for the People's Liberation Army, and participate in other partnerships with China's armed forces, according to the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley sent letters to three major left-of-center philanthropies on Tuesday requesting their compliance with tax regulations in light of their grants to Chinese government entities. Grassley is investigating the Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Brothers Fund, and Ford Foundation that the trio of nonprofit organizations have provided funding to the Chinese government agencies, state-run universities, and even efforts to support China's Belt and Road strategy. Let me interject here before I get into the other point on this. Remember, the Rockefeller Group is in charge of divvying up and allowing, bringing in the foreign trade zones within the United States. Not the fund here, but the Rockefeller Group. And this Belt and Road strategy is a global infrastructure investment program that observers argue empowers Chinese Communist Party to leverage debt against developing countries to extract political concessions, which is maybe not an untruth, but it's not the whole story either. So this is, you can focus on the Chinese party, but this is an investment program, a global infrastructure program. It's the money people behind it. The letters question how the liberal charities are meeting the legal requirements for tax exemption, given the IRS states that direct grants to foreign governments do not serve Internal Revenue Code 501c3 purposes. Quote, according to recent reports, your organization, through grants and direct payments, have funded the Chinese Communist Party and its allies, Grassley wrote. To maintain tax-exempt status, an organization's activities must be charitable in nature and may not directly support or promote the interests of a foreign government. Is Saint Ye hearing this? All the money that he gets, the welfare queen? I'm writing today to ask you whether these reports are true or not. If true, how your organization's conduct comports with 501c3 requirements. Indeed, tax forms filed by the philanthropies themselves attest to their foreign donations. Filings made by these three groups in recent years, for example, disclose millions of dollars in donations to Chinese ministries of commerce, agriculture, and ecology alongside their subsidiaries, as well as organizations managed by China's State Council, the country's supreme government administrative organ, leaving little room for ambiguity. The Rockefeller Brothers Fund, for instance, donated $7.4 million to organizations that are either part of the Chinese government, led by members of the CCP, or engaged in partnerships with China between April 2020 and August 2024. The Gates Foundation, meanwhile, directed roughly $11.7 million in various arms at the CCP, plus $2 million to CRRC, a rail company the Pentagon says is part of the Chinese military apparatus, and an additional $6.7 million to Chinese state-run universities in 2023 alone. The Ford Foundation, which paid out nearly $10 million between April 2020 and November 2023 to various arms of the Chinese government, attracted particular scrutiny from the Senate Judiciary Committee owing to the grants it used with the goal of helping China carry out its strategy of funding foreign infrastructure projects to accumulate influence. Grants issued by the Ford Foundation during this period provided Chinese government entities with resources to advertise the Belt and Road program to stakeholders in the global south. So let's get back to what I was saying. Sustainable development, this new world, the future that they want. This is global infrastructure, and we have stakeholders right here involved, as I've been telling you the problem with that. You don't see shareholders either, and that's part of the problem. What, who are these stakeholders, and what's their stake? What is their interest? And I've explained this on and on. In fact, it just came through again, the Dakota Pipeline thing. I got a bunch of flack from that, boy. A lot of people mad at me when I was telling people, the Indians there, the Native people, they're getting used by the attorneys. I took a ton of flack. Well, it's coming out that they were wrong. Greenpeace is wrong. But the people that were driving them, the attorneys, were all speaking stakeholders. They were talking about stakeholders. It had nothing to do with the people. It had nothing to do with their land and their rights. Anyway, so this is an ongoing theme going on here. The stakeholders in the global South, remember, stakeholders and stalking horses, warm and fuzzy that they get you to feel comfortable with before they shoot you. Compile databases related to such infrastructure projects, train individuals to lead the CCP's global infrastructure investment ventures, and conduct research intended to improve the efficacy of outcomes of such projects. And I got to just remind you here, the total university system of the United States is like this. They produce ambassadors to this stuff. As I said, the Rockefeller Group, not the fund, is the main player in establishing these free trade zones that tear up the local economies. Clint Richardson did the study on that. If you want to see the video, I touched on it, but I explained more of what was going on relative to this leverage funding and all. So again, the United States, they're pointing out, but it's already happening inside. And it's exactly what Trump is, the machine he's starting to turn on, bring onshoring all of it. U.S. policymakers, foreign policy experts, have expressed concern that China's Belt and Road strategy is being used to expand the CCP's global influence and alienate the United States from its allies. Grants paid out by the Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund are also touched on the Belt and Road Initiative, albeit to a lesser extent. Grassley has given the three organizations until November 10th to answer to a series of questions about their compliance with the tax laws. His committee is seeking answers on whether their grants have been used to support Chinese government projects and initiatives, how many foreign projects these charities funded, whether the nonprofit groups directly funded foreign governments, how the organizations made their decisions to fund these Chinese projects, and whether their foreign grants followed the strict IRS guidelines governing them. And all I can say is when I see this and I see what the United States does through its grant leverage and funding, federal to state funding schemes, they just don't want competition. It's already built into the United States. This is not even something new. I've talked about this extensively, that we're all focusing, they're pointing out China. And I'm not saying that China's an angel here. I'm saying that pointing out, have three fingers pointing back, is the problem for America if you want to make it great again. You can't make it great again. There's no way to make it great again. the billionaire boys club, now soon to be trillionaires, win, period. It's over. If they wanted to do something about the IRS, they wanted to help make America great again, it wouldn't matter because the IRS would be gone. You'd have other ways to fund everything. And just as the federal government has closed up shop, also Gates, whistleblower seeks IRS investigation into Gates Foundation for profit vaccine activities. A Florida whistleblower is asking a federal court to enforce the IRS to investigate alleged vaccine-related for-profit activities conducted by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Attorney William S. Scott, executive director of the World Peace Through Education Foundation, made the allegations in a claim filed with the IRS in May 2024. In September 2024, the IRS denied Scott's claim, and on January 8th, he filed an appeal against the IRS in federal court. And I want to interject here, watch how this works. I've suggested this myself. You want to start taking out some of these corporations, maybe look at their tax liabilities, see if they're true, and see if you can make a claim. You make this type of report on the administrative side, this is a fraud, waste, and abuse, there's some money for you if they find it. It's like whistleblower, if you're essentially when you're on the inside. I said, I don't know, again, what the answer is to this, but if we keep shut up when we have an opportunity to make a statement, it's these types of people, these philanthropists that are taking us down and globalizing the world in our silence. Under the pretense of improving world health, and let me interject again and remind us, what did Bill Gates just say? He wanted to get into health. Under the pretense of improving world health, folks, the world needs health. See, this is Gaia. World health, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation Trust has been engaged in the promotion, manufacture, and sale of COVID-19 vaccines that were not sufficiently tested for safety or for effectiveness for their intended use, Scott said in appeal. And if he would have listened behind the woodshed, he could actually say they were promoted as vaccines and they were bioweapons. And state the law. Scott is asking that the IRS tax the Gates Foundation COVID-19 vaccine-related activities retroactively and in the future, quote, as ordinary income from for-profit transactions. The claim that its efforts are charity are bogus and it has acted in bad faith, Scott wrote, referring to the Gates Foundation. Scott's appeal includes a request for a court order to a lower government official to properly fulfill his or her official duties. Scott alleges the IRS failed to fulfill its obligation to investigate the Gates Foundation. So what have I talked about? When you attack them, you attack the officials on their duties and obligations, and that's the statement right there. But again, you just don't say it, you got to back it up. And that's why, again, the great Covey swindle was perfect. Black and white, what they had to do. But none of it got done. No evidence of it. Clearly failed. In a December 20th, 2024 motion to dismiss Scott's original appeal, the IRS claimed that the federal court lacks jurisdiction to hear the case and that the U.S., quote, has not waived its sovereign immunity, a legal doctrine under which the state cannot be sued without its consent. In his January 6th response, Scott alleges that the IRS did not engage in good faith effort to adhere to its own procedures, an assertion he repeated in his amended appeal. In its January 13th response, the IRS repeated its claim of sovereign immunity. The point being for me on that paragraph, as you see, on appeal, he restated the first statement again. You have to bring your case completely up and completely. You can't just drop claims. And so he's done it, before I can see on that point, I'm making the claim, he's done it right. The IRS just comes back with the same answer. The point is they're telling us that he made sure that he said that again. And that's what is now an issue on appeal, whether or not he does, well, with the IRS saying that they have a sovereign immunity, whether or not that can hold up against it. And I'm just wondering whether he came underneath the congressional ability to be a private citizen whistleblower, and that might take that sovereign immunity away. I don't know. It doesn't say here yet. Writing for A Broken Truth TV, journalist John Davidson said the IRS responded to Scott's court order in 5 days, quote, demonstrating the greatest act of government speed and efficiency in modern history. By comparison, Davidson cited an IRS statement that it currently takes the agency approximately 7 months to process new applications for tax-exempt status. Davidson also noted that Matthew L. Paefgren, one of the United States Department of Justice attorneys representing the IRS, was previously employed by McDermott, Will, and Emery, a wealth management group that advised Smart Immune as a Gates Foundation partner. Investigation against Gates Foundation long overdue. Journalist Naomi Wolf, PhD CEO of Daily Clout, called Scott's efforts to force an investigation of the Gates Foundation long overdue. Quote, the conflict of interest apparent in a situation in which Gates receives tax deductions for money spent to fund entities designed to lobby or pressure governments to purchase vaccines in which Gates himself is a major investor is obvious, Wolf told The Defender. And I'm just going through some of this. I can't help but to remind you all, this is what I've been saying. If you wanted to engage, you roll up your sleeves. This is the kind of stuff you go look to go do to start taking out these ne'er-do-wells. We don't just watch it and complain. We have an ability to go out. There's provisions in the law to become that one that can do something. But you got to have the facts. And I think maybe that's our bigger problem. You've got to really be in a position to pull it out and know what you're doing. And that takes, like anything, it takes study. Just complaining on a keyboard somewhere in a social media is not going to help anything. But some of those of you that have the knowledge don't know about this, maybe listen to me a little bit, can take what I say and amplify it and then apply it. This is all sitting out there, all these people. Why is it such long overdue? I've been complaining that no one gets anything done. No one takes action. Of course it's long overdue. Hardly anybody takes action. And the great Kobe Swindle told us most people won't take action to defend themselves against the very things this story talks about here, right? Paragraph by paragraph, as I was delineating it since before the great Kobe Swindle started. In 2019, the great Gates Foundation invested $55 million in German vaccine manufacturer BioNTech, which later partnered with Pfizer to develop the COVID-19 vaccine. You hear the problem. This wasn't a vaccine, and it can be shown by, as a matter of law. This is not your opinion. You don't even need any much evidence. Like the only evidence is the failure to comply with the law to prove it, that it was a vaccine. How's that? And then it's novel. It can't be a vaccine by normal local communicable disease law definition for it. There's nothing natural in it. The Gates Foundation made 15 times its initial investment when it sold its BioNTech shares at the height of their value in 2021. See how the game is played here? In 2019, Gates said that it was his best investment aimed at increasing access to vaccines had a 20-to-1 return. The Gates Foundation continues to invest in other mRNA developers. How come they're not vaccine developers? Because mRNA is not a vaccine. Journalist Paul D. Thacker, a former U.S. Senate investigator, told The Defender, it's highly unlikely the IRS will act against the Gates Foundation. Maybe like it's not acting, the government's not acting against the IBOCSs, are you think? Maybe? Same type of people? The nonprofit section of the IRS has always been loath to take action against corrupt nonprofits, Thacker said. The tax code needs to be rewritten. Well, I guess maybe we just get rid of it and we don't have to worry about it all, right? And then we look at other ways that we re-engage corporations again to do public good, but the Supreme Court took away and allowed them to go after profits instead. That's why you hear about the returns and the investments here. Likely why they say that, because this place was wired to be a commercial entity. Journalist Tim Hinchcliffe, editor of The Sociable, has extensively reported on the activities of the Gates Foundation. He also believes the IRS is unlikely to take action against the foundation. Quote, if the allegations against Gates are proven to be true, I wouldn't expect much to come from the case. Perhaps a slap on the wrist, like a fine, that would be laughable to the Gates Foundation, Hinchcliffe said. Gates Foundation, a significant financier of pro-vaccine organizations. According to Davidson, there would be several implications for the Gates Foundation if it loses its tax-exempt status, including a tax liability, which, based on 2023's figures, would reach $1.44 billion, bravo dollars. The foundation also would lose income from previously tax-deductible donations, leading to an immediate financial impact and loss of public trust. Davidson described the Gates Foundation as a significant financier of the pro-vaccine landscape, citing the organization's founding of and support for Gavi, G-A-V-I, the Vaccine Alliance, the funding it has given other vaccine makers, the World Health Organization, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, and PATH, formerly known as the Program for Appropriate Technology in Health. Who's defining what's appropriate? Especially when you understand it's corporation stakeholders whose only eyeball is going to be on the bottom line. He noted that there is at least one case that serves as a precedent for Scott's case against the IRS and the Gates Foundation. According to NPR, Blue Shield of California lost its tax-exempt status in 2015, quote, for operating like a for-profit company. The federal court is expected to rule on Scott's appeal in the coming days, but Scott did not respond to a request from the defender for comment. The post-whistleblower seeks IRS investigation into Gates Foundation for profit vaccine activities appeared first on the Child Health Defense, and I'd bringing that up to let you go there. If you can't find my link, if you just hear about it, go there. If you're interested, if you want to start seeing how this is done, this is a pretty straight-up article relative to some certain points. Not all of them, certainly, but unless we start challenging what we see, it's not going to happen. And they are more well organized. Again, they got the lawyers to make the laws to impose upon us, we the people. And there's nobody, Trump's not in the, he can't possibly know enough to know to stop it. And anybody like, let's say, Jefferson Mining District that approached him in Trump 1-4 times didn't even get our go to Hades letter. He could care less about what's going on, actually. And what Gates was working with and on, and though he's pivoting, strategic pivot from pushing on the alarmism of climate change, but actually using and promoting its eventual outcomes, is a thing that's been brought up and what the Covey swindle prepared us for. And not only that, it's been going on. I've been reporting this long before the great Covey swindle. But a nation is moving almost at warp speed as fast as that Covey swindle. And all part of why I say climate change is not about the weather, because it's not. And it's a transformation of everyone's lives into the future that they want. We're seeing evidence of that. I think it's no different than the criminality that you see coming out of what Gates will do and how quickly he can just turn while he's harmed so many people and so many things in the world. But we'll move on now to what they really want out of this, evidenced in the news this here for us. Digital ruble to make it possible to track budget spending, central bank head says, explaining that when people adopt being a tokenized citizen in the Siberian gulag, their budget, and therefore themselves, can be tracked for behavioral modification or deprivation, or even, and it's gone. The digital ruble will make it possible to track budget spending, Russian Central Bank Governor Elvira Nubialina said on Thursday. Quote, a digital ruble, and they say digital ruble, we think, oh, it's over there. Folks, it's any one of these stable coins that Trump's pushing. It could be eventually anything that's these, any token style, what we call coins, bitcoins, all this stuff. It can be adopted and brought in. They're making national ruble there. We're watching that. We think it's over there. It's already been brought in. The legislation I've been talking about for a long time is being put in place before we, the people, ever get there. But the digital ruble will make it possible to track budget spending is no different than any other euphemism for any other name of any color coin, a stable coin or Bitcoin, whatever, that they will track what you do. Because the BIS guy told us, the Bank of International Settlements guy told us that they want to get down to track about every nickel that you do, and it's all for this climate change non-alarmism now, transformation to the future that they want, as they control exactly what happens in your life and what your behavior around how you're going to comply or die. Again, and it's gone. They can just take it away from you. They can reprogram your money. You think inflation's bad? You wait till everybody's on a finite condition where your inflation rate is adjusted by whether or not you listened real well and complied to what you were told. The digital ruble will, by the way, make it possible to track in the budget whether money is being spent specifically on equipment purchases or construction work, Nabulina said, speaking in the State Duma. Quote, by the way, we are already running a pilot project in the area of capital construction. So this is before the government doing the government's business relative to the state ruble being brought on. Bringing it brought in online and letting it being used. So watch how the mission creepy happens here as we continue to read. And you can see at the end of the story, it's not really about the government either. There is already control over targeted budget spending, but this will be significantly reduce the cost of organizing such oversight and make the process almost automatic. What's that? Government oversight of budgets. Right now, it's just the state's projects. So automatic, make all this oversight automatic, and it's gone automatically. The digital ruble is a new form of Russia's national currency, complementing the existing cash and non-cash forms. It does not cancel or replace them. We're so comforted. Large-scale adoption of the digital ruble is expected to begin in September 2026. And the Bank of Russia believes it will become a common means of payment within 5 to 7 years. It's not about capital construction of the government, is it? The commoner will willingly consent to walking into the Siberian Gulag digital panopticon within 5 to 7 years of its implementation. And take news this, that the government notice starts out with the government looking at itself to track the budget spending, already running pilot projects in the area of capital construction for control over targeted budget spending, and more efficiently, quote, this will significantly reduce the cost of organizing such oversight and make the process almost automatic, but ends on tracking and controlling the entirety of society with, quote, large-scale adoption of the digital ruble expected to begin in September 2026. In other words, digital slavery has begun. Now, I wonder what the digital cell phone door sounds like when the door closes behind them. I'll wager, with what I don't know if you're inside, but I'll wager, the digital cell phone door is designed to be so quiet that it doesn't disturb those crickets when it closes to begin their life sentence without parole. And Trump intends the same for we the people, if you'll let him. If and you haven't already, start identifying and using or continue to use the existing alternatives. And if being any notion of free is still in you, avoid like your life depends on it, because it does, like the plague the great Kobe swindle was said to be, to prime the psychological pumps flooding the slippery slope into the stinking abyss, avoid the modernized inducements that they are offering to transform your life to an inescapable living digital dungeon. Right in the nooses for us, folks. This is BTWRLM 652. Where do you think all this goes? More and more and more. Kohler made a camera for your toilet. They're not everything about you. Kohler now, private company. Here's a third party problem. Right here. Dakota, D-E-K-O-D-A, Dakota device scans waste to assess hydration, gut health, and more. So much more. Kohler is no stranger to the bathroom, but it has historically provided ways for people to deal with their waste, not analyze it. The company is venturing into the world of personal health tech, Gates. See how these guys will join up together? With Dakota, a device that clamps to the rim under your toilet seat and can analyze the contents of your toilet bowl with your health in mind. The Guardian calls it the $600 poop cam. Kohler, more tastefully, says the device uses discrete optics in order to track the frequency, consistency, and shape of your waste. How do they identify you? At any rate, your waste scans for blood in the bowl and evaluate your hydration levels based on your urine. Like, you can't do that yourself. At any rate, I guess you can. To ensure the analysis is tied to the correct user, Dakota's employs a fingerprint sensor for sign-in before use. That's what I want to do, fiddle with my toilet. But at any rate, biometrics users can then review their health trends and daily summaries via a companion Kohler Health app. The Verge reports you must have a Kohler Health membership in order to access your data at a cost of $70 a year for one person, or $130 annually for up to 5 family members or roommates. If the idea makes you nervous, Kohler emphasizes that Dakota sensors see down into your toilet and nowhere else. But the University of Buffalo Health Data System researcher Joanne Gaia, did you get these names? Are these such perfect names? Joanna Gaia does tell The Guardian that Kohler is not a medical organization, so they are not covered by HIPPA, the U.S. law on medical privacy. This is something that comes up a lot with apps that are healthcare related. But actually, HIPPA isn't so private per a report I read many episodes back as well. So we have to be very careful on what's going on. But here they are, all these third-party companies getting involved. And speaking of misidentifying threatening waste, cops detained teen at gunpoint after AI Doritos mix-up. Artificial intelligence system at Baltimore, 16-year-old school thought bag of chips was a gun. A Baltimore teenager was detained at gunpoint by police after an artificial intelligence system used at his high school mistook a bag of chips for a firearm. Taki Allen, 16, described the WMAR a chaotic scene at Kenwood High School in which 8 police cars arrived and officers ordered him to the ground, all due to an AI error-prone generated alert. Police in Baltimore County say they acted, quote, appropriately and proportionally based on the info they received and emphasized that Taki was handcuffed but not arrested. Can I just remind you back to these last few episodes that all this appropriately and proportionally can allow that you're not going to get compensated for the abuse to you? The confusion began when the AI flagged Taki's empty Doritos bag in his pocket as a potential weapon. The alert was supposed to be reviewed by human staff who found no threat, but that no worries message was missed by the principal, who then contacted the school safety team. Police were ultimately called as a result. That's like 3 or 4 more eyeballs that got it wrong. Allen reflecting on the incident, said he no longer feels safe waiting outside after football practice, fearing another misunderstanding could escalate. Quote, I didn't feel like the school actually cared about me, tells WBFF, because nobody came up to me after, not even the principal. The event has triggered calls from local officials for a review of the school district's reliance on AI-powered weapon detection systems. What about your health detection systems? What about any other detection systems run by AI? The AI provider in question, OmniAlert, claims its technology is trained on real-world data to minimize false alarms. Allen, however, is unconvinced, stating, I don't think no chip bag should be mistaken for a gun at all. The incident highlights growing concerns about the reliability of AI in high-stakes environments. your lives, folks. Not just this grand display by the cops. The most subtle things can become life-changing for you in this high-stakes environment called your life. Particularly after the U.S. company Evolve Technology faced scrutiny last year for making unsupported claims about its weapon detection capabilities. So the government accused, threatened, and restrained someone of their liberty who was innocent without any warrant whatsoever. That's okay with people? What is this kid's right to resist an unlawful arrest? Do we start seeing more killed by cop? So who's free here? As I said, somebody on the X, they said, you know, telling the sovereign citizens, the cops are just projecting. The cops are the privileged few. Not you. Not at all. So who's free? Apparently not your property if Amazon comes a knocking. It's a little bit shocking to me. I really dislike this direction everything's going. But Amazon prototypes AI smart glasses. And what have I said? Not only is AI error pronation, SMART is not too intelligent. So they're combining it now with Amazon's doing. Amazon smart glasses provide delivery drivers with the Pip-Boy style HUD, H-U-D, also serving as further proof we live in the most dystopian timeline. Every time the Amazon delivery driver drops off a parcel at my door, then whips out their phone and they take a photo of it. And if I happen to be holding the package already, I pose with it, like a 1960s catalog model desperate to make their big break. I'm telling you this because I'd rather enjoy the running joke, which may soon be ruined by the Amazon Amelia smart glasses. Amazon has shown off the latest prototype of its AI-enhanced smart specs, designed to provide delivery drivers with not only a built-in camera activated with a handy vest button for delivery confirmation photos, but also an heads-up display, HUD, that looks remarkably similar to the Fallout UI, complete with the iconic shade of neo-green. Amazon says the heads-up display can provide navigation details, flag hazards, and help drivers keep track of delivery tasks. The HUD is turned off while said driver is on the road, you'll be pleased to hear, but automatically activates as soon as they're safely parked at their delivery location. The delivery workers can then take advantage of the turn-by-turn navigation feature to guide them to the correct door, which looks at a whole lot like a mini-map in the videos. Remember I'm talking about that Roomba? It takes out, just goes about and maps your whole place on the inside. This is what it's kind of like for the delivery driver and his glasses. The retail giant says it has consulted with delivery drivers during the development process to gain feedback as to how to implement these features, and according to one test subject, the glasses are indeed great. I didn't hear them consult with any of the property owners. Quote, I felt safer the whole time because the glasses have the info right in my field of view, says Caleb M., a delivery driver working in Omaha, Nebraska. Instead of having to look down at a phone, you can keep your eyes forward and look past the display. You're always focused on what's ahead. There's always something undeniably dystopian about employees wearing work-enhancing tech, turning themselves into something of a delivery cyborg. Sure, it may well have some benefits for the drivers themselves, but it's fairly easy to imagine a future where donning the all-seeing eyeglasses becomes a requirement rather than an optional way to enhance their safety. All that being said, something about these employee-enhancing smart glasses gives me a very distinctive ick, like it's a step too far in our late-stage capitalistic dystopian-to-go future. They're just in the test phase right now, but I've got a feeling it won't be too long before something similar starts turning up at a doorstep near you. And wait until Amazon teams up with Flock U. Sounds like you need a trespassing sign here. particularly for Amazon deliveries now. What say you, Jeff Bezos? What are you going to do about this? Three wrongly accused over child abuse images after BT gets wires crossed. Three people are wrongly accused of downloading child abuse images due to a broadband wiring error by a BT engineer. The mistake meant internet activity linked to the real offender was traced instead to the addresses where two men and women were staying who had their electronic devices seized over the course of two police searches. The false accusations back in 2016 had highly distressing and far-reaching consequences for the three. They went to court to get some justice from this problem, and the court ruled that Dyfed Pau's police had acted lawfully and found that the error was caused by a technical fault rather than police misconduct. BT has been approached for comment. They didn't. The IPT deals with the complaints from anyone who feels they have been a victim of unlawful action by the public body using a covert investigative techniques. Each of these three claimants were granted anonymity by the tribunal, and the location of the incident was only described as Dyfed Pau's police area of operation in Wales, which covers a Carmarthenshire, Corrigan in Pembrokeshire, and Powys. British telecommunications firm BT told the tribunal that two wires within a street cabinet leaking to both addresses had been inadvertently crossed. As a result, the offending IP address had been incorrectly attributed to the address of the first male claimant, who was its registered tenant, which he shared with a friend whose girlfriend was also visiting at the time. The tribunal heard all three had to tell their employers about the accusations made against them. The innocent woman was advised her children could not live with her alone until she was cleared, and the two men faced child protection referrals. The first male claimants were placed on restricted duties at work, and the second had a job offer withdrawn. The three were never charged. The police later identified and prosecuted the actual offender, who lived nearby. The tribunal did not find grounds for compensation or remedy for the three claimants, as the force had acted within the law and responded appropriately once the error was discovered. A spokesperson from Dyfed Pau's police said, quote, "We recognize the upset and hurt suffered by the claimants in this case and commend them for the dignity, integrity, and full cooperation shown throughout. We welcome the judgment, which recognizes that the errors discovered were at no fault of the police and all investigatory actions carried out by our officers were lawful, proportionate, and necessary. Despite the difficult circumstances, we are satisfied that the party responsible for this error has been brought to justice." But no justice to the victims. And my observation was this is a physical wire crossing. What happens when AI's wires get crossed? How are you going to undo that one? And then you get harmed, and there's no compensation. Well, let's hope this next problem doesn't identify you like unaccountable crossed wires. And I reported on this technology years ago, but here's an AI-enhanced update. Wi-Fi can accurately identify people even if they aren't carrying a phone or a computer. I hope all these tabs on content I'm bringing put together on a lot of the news and nuisances out there, the things I've reported on, and how they interrelate, they interlock, how they build these infrastructure data collection systems that are going to be working all overtime for you. You're going to have to be dignified in accepting it. The takeaway here on this story with the Wi-Fi, people often worry about being tracked through their wireless devices, especially when using public Wi-Fi networks. However, researchers have discovered multiple methods to detect and potentially track individuals via Wi-Fi, even if they are not carrying any devices, and the widespread presence of Wi-Fi networks makes these surveillance tactics potentially universal. According to a recent study, or a PDF form from the article, the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, any Wi-Fi router that supports Wi-Fi 5 or 802.11ac or newer can be used to observe people within range. The findings raise serious privacy concerns. The researchers introduced a new identity inference attack called BFID, which exploits beamforming, a technique standardized with Wi-Fi 5 or 802.11ac. The attack is possible with commercially available hardware and tracks people rather than the devices they carry, bypassing software-based security measures. If multiple Wi-Fi devices can communicate with each other, beamforming signals can generate radio-based images from multiple angles, enabling the identification of people without cameras or other traditional methods. In the study, researchers were able to track 197 participants with nearly 100% accuracy, regardless of how they moved or the angle from which they were detected. Once a machine learning model is trained, the system can identify targets within seconds. Moreover, because Wi-Fi signals are unencrypted, this information is accessible to anyone within range. Most Wi-Fi devices currently in use likely support Wi-Fi 5 or newer, meaning BFID could potentially be deployed almost anywhere. Privacy advocates warn that governments, cyber criminals, and other malicious actors could exploit the technology to observe targets more discreetly than traditional surveillance methods. And from the tools used to incriminate you department, DHS asked OpenAI to unmask user behind ChatGPT prompts, possibly the first such case. ChatGPT conversations are being probed as part of a child abuse case, the report says. And what else? Sooner than later here. The federal government has long leaned on tech companies to fork over user data to aid in its law enforcement investigations. However, while social media companies, search engines, and other tech platforms have all surrendered data in pursuit of federal probes, AI companies have largely remained an untouched frontier, legally speaking. Until now, that is. Forbes writes that a unit within the Department of Homeland Security that investigates child sex crimes has asked OpenAI to turn over information about a user that they say is the administrator of a child abuse website. The person in question discussed their abuse of ChatGPT with an undercover agent on the child abuse site, which spurred the government to ask the company for records that might assist with their case. The Forbes refers to this as the first known federal search warrant asking OpenAI for user data and says it discovered the case by reviewing court records unsealed in Maine last week. The prompts that the user entered into the ChatGPT seemed to be completely disconnected from the crimes they're accused of committing. And this brings up a real important factor. It's not what you say or do. It's, again, as I said, how someone wants to rearrange what you've said to make it mean something that they can prosecute. And this is part of the right to remain silent thing right here. This takes it right away from you. So let's understand what I guess I'm really pointing out about this, the real danger about these things as well. Forbes writes that, among other things, they involved a question about Star Trek and an AI-generated poem composed of in Trump style. The suspect then disclosed some prompts and responses that they had received detailing an apparently innocuous discussion that began with, "What would happen if Sherlock Holmes met Q from Star Trek?" In another discussion, the suspect said they'd received a response from ChatGPT for an unspecified request about a 200,000-word poem, receiving in response a sample excerpt of a humorous Trump-style poem about his love for the Village People's YMCA, written in the over-the-top self-aggrandizing stream of consciousness style he's known for. Then they copied and pasted that poem. Forbes also notes that the DHS has not asked OpenAI for any identifying information, as the government already believes it has identified the criminal in question. It's already identified the criminal in question. According to the criminal complaint against the suspect, undercover agents used context clues pieced together from ongoing conversations with the user to put together a profile on who he might be. Those context clues include comments he allegedly made while speaking with the undercover agent, including his desire to join the military, the places he'd lived and visited, a favorite restaurant, and his work for a military base, among other things. The clues led investigators to believe that he was a 36-year-old man who had previously worked on a U.S. Air Force base in Germany. The search warrant that is the basis for much of the Forbes reporting appears to have since been sealed. However, criminal complaint against the suspect is still public. An excerpt of that complaint reads partially, quote, "In several conversations occurring between suspect user and the UC undercover agent in July 2025 and August 2025, suspect user indicated that he was too overweight to be considered for employment by the military. Agents were informed by the military recruiters that when the suspect in question first came for an initial interview, it was approximately June or July 2025, and he was over the acceptable weight for an individual of his weight. Subsequent, more recent conversations between suspect user and the UC indicated that suspect user had made progress on that front, and military recruiters likewise indicated to agents that the suspect was now within the military guidelines. Federal law enforcement has routinely looked to gather data for investigations from other tech platforms and AI companies are giant troves of user information, so it makes perfect sense that law enforcement agencies would also see them as an important tool when it comes to fighting crime. This is surely just the beginning of AI chatbots' use in that capacity. Also DHS expands nationwide airport biometric tracking. Do you hear that cell phone door closing on us, folks? No, get this. That's for Homeland Security, not your security. The Department of Homeland Security has introduced a new rule that will greatly expand biometric tracking at U.S. borders, establishing a system of photograph and identity for every non-citizen who enters or leaves the country. And you say, oh, well, it's just for non-citizens. Yes, and you need to know that, because that's what you're going to find, that they're misapplying this to everybody. They'll expand. Emission creepiness gets really fast in these guys. But understand, this is for national security, not yours, and why you have to understand a lot of what's going on and why I talk about some of this. We have to hear that it's there, and we may have to address it. We're talking about DHS. Oh, we're not going to go flying. We're not going to do that. Well, it's going to hit the town near you. I already told you, we're all considered the migrant. We're considered presumed guilty after the PATIOT Act. Although the regulation, remember, the regulations, those are rules promulgated. Those can be challenged as well, but not in when you're standing in the airport, that's for sure. Although the regulation applies to non-citizens, the cameras do not distinguish citizen from non-citizen in real time. The CBP says U.S. citizens may opt out by presenting their passports manually, and that photos of citizens are deleted within 12 hours once nationality is confirmed. So you can't opt out, can you? So that's after the fact. Starting December 26, Customs and Border Protection will have authority to take photographs of all aliens, not only at passports and land crossings, but any other point of departure the agency designates. The DHS describes the change as operational modernization. That's right, transforming your life to the future that they want. Privacy and civil liberties organizations see it differently, warning that it formalizes a broad surveillance network that has been years in the development. And you've heard me report on most all of it as we've been going along. I don't do it constantly. There's so much information, but you hear me recently. It's been more and more episodes. This has not been a surprise if we've been paying attention at all. The policy completes the long-promised biometric entry-exit system that Congress first ordered in the 1990s and that gained renewed political momentum after the September 11th Terrorist Act in 2001. The false flag attack that keeps on taking. Earlier restrictions, such as the pilot site caps and age-based exemptions, have been removed. The result is a regulation that opens the way for a connected web of facial recognition systems across airports, seaports, vehicle lanes, and pedestrian crossings. Until now, CPB's use of biometrics has been uneven. The simplified arrival program already photographs nearly all foreign travelers entering the country at major airports, comparing the images to visas and passport records. I guess the IBOCS members are the ones they don't shoot, and somehow they know that before they get before the camera. Departures, however, were rarely monitored except at a few test sites. The new rule changes that by requiring biometric collection for every non-citizen departure by air, land, or sea. Officials claim the expansion will make travel faster and safer. DHS says that photographing travelers at entry and exit allows CBP to verify identities within seconds, reducing document fraud and streamlining inspections. Each image is sent to the Traveler Verification Service, a cloud-based matching system that connects with other governmental databases. When the software confirms a match, it notifies a CBP officer. For non-citizens, the photos are related data can be retained for as long as 75 years in the central biometric database known as IDENT, I-D-E-N-T. The rule gives DHS wide flexibility to decide where and when to take the photographs, allowing cameras anywhere CBP operates, including boarding gates, border checkpoints, cruise terminals, and even private airfields or marinas. Officials justify the scope as a way to prevent travelers from leaving unverified, while privacy advocates argue it effectively enables biometric surveillance at almost any international departure point and impacts citizens too. And remember, those international departure points, those ports, are what the Rockefeller Group then assigns a foreign trade zone area for, that the locals get to pay for the foreigners to come in with their privileged workers from their countries and take away jobs locally. Fascinating how they got this work, and everybody's up with it, what they're putting in place to keep track of all that. Now, if you have a right to travel and are presumed innocent, and there is no probable cause of any wrongdoing, what's the authority they are relying on to ask at all, or to put you in government database for any duration? False matches remain a concern. CBP testing found error rates up to 3%, which could mean thousands of travelers are misidentified each day once the system reaches nationwide scale. Such errors make voluntary participation questionable, since a mistake can result in a data being retained beyond the promised deletion window. The Traveler Verification System connects with other DHS databases, including the Automated Targeting System, the Drone Targeting, the Arrival and Departure Information System, Enhanced Passenger Processing. That's not just airplanes, passengers, or anybody that pays to ride, right? Are they going to admit that that includes your motor vehicle that you pay for? Data ultimately feeds into IDENT, which stores fingerprints, facial scans, and iris data. Non-immigration records can be held for 75 years, permanent resident data for 15, and user citizens records only in short-term logs. But if they misidentify you and they say you're not an American citizen, a U.S. citizen, forget American, a United States citizen subject, how long is that going to stay in there? Privacy and technology groups have warned that the program's long retention periods and interagency data sharing could turn it into a persistent tracking tool for millions of lawful residents and visa holders. The problem is that convenience and automation can create coercive conditions over time. I think it's coercive and extortionate right up front. I don't know about you. When facial recognition lanes move passengers through in seconds while manual verification takes several minutes, those who opt out will find themselves in slower, longer, less staffed lines, clearly on purpose. Airports pressured to maintain throughput will likely allocate fewer agents to manual document checks, effectively penalizing those who choose not to participate in biometric programs. This subtly transforms a voluntary system into a de facto mandatory one. The slow erosion of choice doesn't come from a formal mandate, but from bureaucratic efficiency pressures and traveler frustration. And choice is instantly restored once you value the word no more than their authorita or felony extorted and coerced convenience for them. From the kids, you know what to do department, police are asking kids to stop pulling AI homeless man pranks. We've been so worried about deepfake politicians, AI musicians, virtual actresses, and phony satellite imagery that we didn't even consider the dangers posed by precocious teenagers. Kids are using AI-created images of disheveled, seemingly unhoused persons in their home and sending them to their parents. Understandably, they're not thrilled and in some instances call the police. The prank has gone viral on TikTok in addition to giving parents agita, has become a headache for law enforcement. The premise is simple enough. Kids use Snapchat AI tools to create images of a grimy man in their home and tell their parents they let them in to use the bathroom, take a nap, or just get a drink of water. Often they say the person claims to know the parents from work or college, and then predictably the parents lose their cool and demand they kick the man out. The kids, of course, record the whole thing and post their parents' reactions on TikTok, where some of the clips have been viewed by millions. Where things go from problematic to potentially dangerous is when the prank carries on for too long and the parents call the authorities. Calls of a home invasion, especially involving children, are treated as high priority by police, so prank like this can tie up valuable resources and could actually put the pranksters in danger. Round Rock Police Patrol Division Commander Andy McKinney told NBC that it could even cause a SWAT response. The Salem, Massachusetts Police Department summed it up best in a statement saying, "This prank dehumanizes homeless, causes the distressed recipient to panic, and waste police resources. Police officers who are called upon to respond do not know this is a prank and treat the call as an actual burglar in process, thus creating a potentially dangerous situation. So while we all love a good prank, maybe let this one go. Maybe. However, what are you going to do when you're a youth?" And speaking of the kids, and being presumed the little goats you all is, California opens public comment on online age verification ID. A plan to shield kids from social media addiction could end up forcing every Californian to trade privacy for permission to speak online. California Attorney General Rob Bonta has launched a preliminary phase of rulemaking for Senate Bill 976, the Protecting Our Kids from Social Media Addiction Act. The legislation mandates that social media companies use age assurance systems to determine whether a California user is an adult or a minor. The Attorney General has until January the 1st, 2027, to complete and adopt the final regulations. The Department of Justice, DOJ, will host a public meeting on November the 5th, 2025, to gather feedback from residents, experts, but organizations about how these rules should be structured. The DOJ is seeking public comment on the potential effects of the proposed regulations. And again, you know, this is why I'm pointing this out to read it to you. They're seeking comment. Proposed regulations. Another opportunity. The DOJ is seeking public comment on the potential effects of the proposed regulations. And this is important to keep track of what they're wanting to hear. If you talk outside this, they won't listen. Get the article, get the link, and read it. But I'll read parts of these here. Citizens can send their comments in a written form to an email that's protected on the website link you might want to track down, but you can send it through the email. And note that any information provided is subject to the Public Records Act, and read those to find out you can have your information held back. Not all of it can, but some of it can. You have to make the request. Typically, you make that request in the document. SB 976 was introduced to limit the impact of addictive online design features on minors. It requires the Attorney General to create standards for age assurance and parental consent that align with the Act's stated purpose of child protection. I think that's an interesting little clue. How about we just put it on the parental consent? Stop treating everybody like a minor that has to prove it. And that'll mean someone that digs rocks and for gold. However, privacy advocates have raised the alarm that an age assurance requirement could erode online anonymity, forcing individuals to hand over sensitive identification data to access social platforms. Such a system would expose Californians to new risks of data collection, profiling, and potential misuse of personal information. As we've just been hearing, the cops pull this information together, and they piece it together as they will. The DOJ has requested a public input in three main areas. And here's where you want to take a list and answer to these things when you do make a comment. Methods and technical standards for age verification on social media and digital platforms used by minors. Continuing obligations for platform operators tasked with performing age checks. Procedures and protections surrounding parental consent for minors' participation online. The law's age verification provision has already faced legal challenges. NetChoice, a trade aid association representing major technology firms, filed suit against Attorney General Bontas, asserting that SB 976 violates the First Amendment by requiring Californians to surrender personal documentation in order to engage in lawful online speech. On September 9, 2025, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit mostly upheld SB 976, but did not rule definitively on the age assurance section, noting that it could not determine its effect on free expression until the regulations were finalized. And I'm not sure how they're going to identify the effect more than the finalization. So this is an opportunity for those of us in California, those of you that are in California, to start entering in, but understand the problem is here for us, and I'll get to that again after I read a little bit more, it's a rules promulgation. I still think there's an action that can be made to challenge the law, but we'll see when we get down through here. On September 23rd, NetChoice submitted a petition for rehearing en banc, seeking a review by the full court rather than the original three-panel judge. Unless the Ninth Circuit agrees to rehear the case, the Attorney General may continue developing the rulemaking framework. However, if the court grants the rehearing, it could temporarily halt enforcement of the age assurance provision or even suspend the law altogether. And any of you that really know how to do this, you could actually maybe on appeal, maybe you can't, but you might be able to put new evidence that hasn't been shown from the court case that may be able to throw that a further monkey wrench into the works. So this comment should be done, but appears to be a bit of a sticky wicket relative to the fact that the law is enacted. And this is only for the rules that will implement that law, not challenge it. But research out whether this might be an avenue to challenge the law because the rule can't be promulgated that won't violate that presumption of you're actually over the age of a minor or your presumption for telling the truth and of the presumption of innocence. And anything else you might find that this type of law violates, all of which is readily proven by your status in a properly pled lawsuit. So this may be, to my mind, an interesting way to challenge that law, showing, well, I go to court and I sue against it. There's no question. How come all of a sudden it's a question when I get online? Why am I presumed to be a minor? Well, why aren't the parents charged with protection? So for those of you that are able, see what you can do. Don't let this thing go unchallenged like we have in so many ways, as I was reading earlier against the Gates Foundation. Anybody who had some knowledge, they're saying it was a whistleblower, an insider, if you will. But we had plenty of fraud, waste, and abuse to go attack these corporations, and we don't do it as a people. As we read, Global Cybercrime Treaty draws criticism from rights groups and tech companies over surveillance fears. So this is a big deal going through the world on everything that they've thrown on. Again, the rights of child was a serious problem when it was enacted in the UN, the international. United States keeps signing on to this stuff. Trump didn't throw that out. Oh, what, look at the politics behind. Oh, you don't care about the children? Well, that law, it's like climate change is not about the weather. The rights of child is not about protecting children. It's about this thing that's going on. Global Cybercrime Treaty draws criticism. Well, 65 countries, including the United States and Canada, have signed on to a United Nations treaty on cybercrime that threatens privacy, online research, and free expression. The agreement, known as the UN Convention Against Cybercrime, was signed in Hanoi and will take effect once 40 member states have ratified it. Each country must complete its own ratification process. In the United States, people, Americans, listen up. Here's your opportunity to jump in on this. In the United States, 2/3 of the Senate vote is required for approval. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres described the treaty as an essential step in combating cybercrime, saying that cyberspace has become fertile ground for criminals. Every day, sophisticated scams defraud families, steal livelihoods, and drain billions of dollars from our economies. But cybercrime pales in comparison, doesn't it? I mean, isn't it the fact that government is the fertile ground for criminals and we see nothing stopping that? He called the convention a powerful legally binding instrument from strengthening our collective defenses against cybercrime. Not you, the collective. And insisted if it cannot be used for any forms of surveillance or others that could be linked to violations of human rights. The UN Office on Drugs and Crime, which directed negotiations, have argued that the treaty includes protections for human rights and legitimate research. But organizations such as Human Rights Watch and the Electronic Frontier Foundation disagree. Before the signing, both groups urged governments not to endorse the treaty, warning that its vague definitions would allow governments to monitor citizens, prosecute security researchers, and suppress political speech. And I want to bring up here, tie together the fact that they can jump borders anymore. They can go ahead and essentially charge you from another country, it seems. There's that Interpol condition that can happen. We talked about years and years ago through the PATRIT Act already in place. Before the signing, both groups urged governments not to endorse the treaty, warning that vague definitions could allow governments to monitor citizens. Technology companies have raised concerns. The Cybersecurity Tech Accord, whose members include Meta and Microsoft, described the treaty as a surveillance treaty that could promote government data sharing and criminalize ethical hacking, so says two of the corporations that are actually doing that. I guess they don't want competition either. Vietnam, they make a buck on it now, don't they? Vietnam, the host of the signing ceremony, has faced repeated criticisms over online censorship. U.S. State Department's recently cited significant human rights issues in the country, and Human Rights Watch reports that at least 40 people have been arrested this year for online activity alone. And I don't hear here on this story where the United States State Department says more than complain about some other country instead of condemning it outright. Vietnam's President Luang Quoc welcomed the treaty, saying it not only marks the birth of the global legal instrument, but also affirms the enduring vitality of multilateralism, where countries overcome differences and are willing to shoulder responsibilities together for the common interests of peace, security, stability, and development. the common interest. Who defines that? Not your interests, it's the common interest. The Borg. The Hive. The controlling wardens. The they. Supporters argue that the agreement will improve coordination against crimes such as ransomware, phishing, and online trafficking. Opponents maintain that the treaty's broad provisions could enable governments to misuse cybercrime laws and pursue journalists, researchers, and activists. The signing of the Cybercrime Convention comes as Guterres continues to expand his call for global action against what he calls the mis- and disinformation and online harassment. Speaking at the World Meteorological Organization's conference in Geneva, Guterres linked the spread of false information to public confusion about climate change and urged governments to resist false narratives and defend scientific research from distortion. We must fight mis- and disinformation online, harassment, and greenwashing, he told delegates. Cybercrime will soon be not expressing government speak. And Trump's administration just signed on to that universal control despite the First Amendment prohibiting such treatment and however reserved to the United States. And we're certainly seeing the rest of the world does not protect the free speech and free expression protected in the First Amendment, or ostensibly so here. So as we, the people, are confronted daily in the several United States by federal and local officials for exercising that speech and expression. In particular, we're criticizing those committing genocide of the Semitic Palestinians, ongoing. And someone that can be confused for a pretentious, ill-mannered kid that doesn't care about misinformation or disinformation or making false claims against people. Zelensky says he doesn't care if claim used to oust Odessa mayor is fake. Ukrainian leader removed Gennady Krikhanov from his post after he was accused of holding the Russian citizenship. Ukraine's Vladimir Zelensky has said he is unconcerned about whether the evidence used to oust the former Odessa mayor Gennady Krikhanov was fake. Zelensky fired the mayor of the southern city earlier this month over accusations that he holds a Russian passport. The allegations have reportedly since been shown to contain false information, with the passport number that the Ukrainian investigators claim was Krikhanov's actually belonging to a woman from Siberia who recently crossed the Russian border. We got the two wires crossed, right? This is global, this problem. The cop's making stuff up. It's not just Zelensky. No, he's just exampling for us to look over in that carnival mirror. Zelensky defended his decision to journalists on Tuesday, admitting he did not question the evidence presented by investigators. How many passports he has, which are real, which are fake? Who made them? Frankly speaking, I don't care, Zelensky said, as quoted by Ukrform. Is it 100% true that he's a Russian citizen? Tell me yes. Krikhanov was one of the several people stripped of Ukrainian citizenship earlier this month under Zelensky's decree targeting individuals accused of secretly holding Russian passports. His administration has since been replaced by one appointed directly by the central government. Krikhanov has said that the allegations against him are based on fabrications and that he is a victim of a political purge. What about the homegrown here in America? Your visa? Oh, you got the wrong picture. What about all that? Big old database. You can't get through. You're going to talk to AI. AI doesn't care. Then, just like Zelensky. In an interview following his removal, he compared the situation to the Stalin-era repression, arguing that there is no viable path for appeal under Zelensky's rule, and likely under AI rule either. The reports are pointed to growing friction between Zelensky and prominent mayors, including Kiev's Vitali Klykashenko, who accused the Ukrainian leader of consolidating power and edging toward a dictatorship. Now, how is this any different? A martial law rule than Trump killing people and removing them from office just because. Uncaring of just cause. Sounds as if they operate out of the same tyrant playbook, don't it? How does that make America great again? This has been BTW RLM 652, and I'll be with you next week. Tech tips or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you
all here. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Hide a cantaloupe fast, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airways burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.